This is a business radio show where we talk about the craziness of small business. It's that craziness that actually makes it exciting, interesting, and totally unpredictable. This is Business Insanity Talk Radio with your host, Barry Maltz.
Well, thanks for joining this week's radio show. And remember, this is the final word in small business. For those keeping track, this is now show number 429. This episode is provided by Nextiva, the answer to all your business communication solutions in the cloud. It's also provided by Alibaba and their groundbreaking conference for small business owners who want to get access to China's 500 million consumers. It's called Gateway 17 on June 21st to 22nd in Detroit. Plus, it's sponsored by BloomBat, getting flowers exactly what you ordered delivered nationwide for Mother's Day. Well, with Donald Trump now being president, a lot of people are questioning the relevance of morality in business these days. My next guest examines this question. Eden Collinsworth is the author of a new book called Behaving Badly, The New Morality in Politics, Sex, and Business. Eden, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Well, I have to tell you, this book could not have come out at a better time because I think a lot of people are questioning, do the ends really justify the means? Is there really a relevance of morality today in business?
Well, I believe there is. It hasn't felt that way, but in fact, I think if you look for some silver lining, which I think is crucial, otherwise you frankly would just crawl
that's
under
right.
a rock.
Exactly. Or drink a lot of alcohol.
I think that's probably right. I was speaking to an American friend the other day, and she told me she was afraid of becoming an alcoholic. So,
absolutely.
So I think that's certainly one option. You know, my sense is that even though it feels as though we're on a downward slide in terms of morality and civility and ethics, all of which are interconnected, I take solace in the fact that we still draw lines around what we believe to be acceptable and what we know to be unacceptable. And I think that what is encouraging is that we take those lines less for granted these days, and we're willing to defend those lines. And so I think that's very encouraging. You know, we've become better informed as citizens, we do have a check and balance system. I'm hoping that it remains operational. I'm very much aware of the fact that I've lived in countries that don't have that check and balance system. I've lived in China where there's simply a one party system, and so I think that there are hopeful signs. It often doesn't feel that way. It feels as though it can't possibly get worse, and then you get up in the morning and you realize that it's worse in a different way.
Right. Well, it is. You know, I've run businesses for many, many years, and I have to say, and I've talked a lot about it in my first book, that it is a gray line. You know, I'm not the most moral or honest person that's out there. I have crossed the line back and forth. So this idea of morality is very hazily defined in business. So I guess, how does a small business owner, Eden, really define it for themselves?
Well, I think it's important, just generally speaking, to make clear that there's a difference between morality and ethics. So morality is a set of personal beliefs, and ethics is expressed by way of the expectations that are defined and the kind of sanctions enforced by a given culture or society. So, for example, in business, I believe it was in one of the southern states, there was recently a small business owner who felt very strongly about denying Planned Parenthood or anything that had to do with contraception into the healthcare insurance that he offered. And so he was certainly within his rights to feel the way he felt in terms of his moral, his personal set of beliefs, his morality. But ethically speaking, he was operating outside of the law at the time. I mean, I think things are in such a state of flux right now. So there's an example of how, is sometimes comes into conflict. But, you know, I think we all operate in a gray area, especially, you know, if one is an entrepreneur. You certainly see the gray area in large businesses and banks. You know, it's very sobering to be reminded that there have been billions, hundreds of billions of dollars paid out in for malfeasance, and not many bankers or traders or business people have gone to jail.
Right,
and
right.
I think that there's, you know, there's great inequity in that.
And this is really what worries me, Eden, is because, and I've done, I it worries me because I've done this, you know, 20 years ago in a past life. It seems like as long as we make money and we define success by making money, then any means of making that money really is justifiable.
Well, that the flip side to that is to rather logically come to the conclusion that Western capitalism is immoral. It's certainly, I myself have started a business at one point. I knew nothing at all about raising money or magazine publishing, and in an act of either great courage or deep stupidity, I decided to launch a magazine in Los Angeles, and I raised the money to do it. And you know, the point is that had I gone to business school, I probably wouldn't have taken that risk.
Right.
And the supreme irony is that when I started to work for the Hearst Corporation, after running a company and starting a company, they suggested that I go off to a business school, you know, management course. And my point in this story is that I was reminded emphatically that the first obligation is to return a profit, you know, and is towards the shareholders. So it's not has not to do with the product. It doesn't have to do with the workers. It has to do with returning a return, you know, providing a return on investment. So in that way, it sounds absolutely bereft of any moral direction, frankly.
It's interesting because I kind of got through some of those more, I would say, morally challenging time when I realized that money was not the only goal, that I couldn't justify everything that I was doing because I was going to make money for myself or my shareholders, that I had mm-hmm. to decide what kind of life did I really want to lead. And that's what I try to teach other entrepreneurs, that you really have to balance these two things, you know, the morale and the ethics of it and the financial result. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. But I think at times it's very difficult. And I think that's, frankly, where character comes in. And, you know, I remember being feeling as though I had painted myself in a corner when I had launched this magazine. There were people who were dependent upon their salaries. And my first instinct was to not pay the gas company and pay the writers and pay the staff. And so, you know, you do make personal judgments along the way. And I think that I would like to think that in our best efforts, we all try to be fairly straightforward and honest. But I've got to tell you that if you look at the research, the fact is that we are more likely to be altruistic and empathetic and generous in spirit if money isn't involved.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm afraid that we have a tendency of behaving very badly around money. And that's not just an American trait. That is, you see it across the board. So if you look at, you know, the scandal in terms of the automobile emissions, you know, issues, there were the Germans, there were the Japanese, there were the Americans. And if you look at the scandal in terms of the Panama Papers, you know, it was just a rogues gallery of global participants. So I'm afraid that people behave, you know, our people behave like people around money, which is not always exemplary.
And I've seen this time and time again as I act as a broker for selling businesses where there's a lot of money at stake. People turn into somebody else. So I guess what is the antidote in your book? I mean, it starts out with the premise of behaving badly, the morality of politics, sex, and business. What advice do you have for us? What kind of to live, I guess, a better life?
Well, I think that it's an individual choice, but I would agree with your premise that it can't be focused on one thing exclusively. And I think that certainly as I've gotten older, I've had an extraordinarily eclectic career. I haven't really been holding to one path. I've been involved in primarily in media, but I was a book publisher. I launched a magazine, and then I became a corporate executive. I then became the chief of staff of a global think tank. And my point is that as I've moved my way through with all of these various activities and phases of my life, what becomes more important to me is how I live my life.
Right.
And I think that's obviously we all have to pay the bills, but I think that that's really crucial because, frankly, I don't know what else there is if you don't have that.
Eden, I got to interrupt you there. We're out of time. Thanks so much for being on the show. The title of the book is The New Behaving Badly, New Morality in Politics, Sex, and Business. A very, very timely book. Thanks so much for calling in and being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That's AM 560. We'll be right back.
Stuck in traffic? We've got the answer. From the Alarm Detection Systems Traffic Center.
I'm Jeremy Scott. Taking a look at your roadways. The big issue right now is outbound on the Kennedy, where it is just bumper to bumper right now from Adams to Ogden. Three right lanes are closed for construction. That's going to last for the next couple of hours. And you are also seeing no access to the Ohio feeder ramp from the outbound Kennedy until 7 a.m. either. Right now, 13 to Montrose, 23 minutes out to the airport. Once you pass that, you're looking pretty good on the rest of the Kennedy, and all the expressways are delay-free at this time with no other major problems slowing you down this early morning hour. If you are traveling through the downtown area, crane removal shuts down Grand Avenue from Columbus to St. Clair, and that's going to last until tomorrow morning's rush. Other than that, the rest of the roadways are looking good. Looking a little chilly out there right now, but we're going to see some abundant sunshine with highs in the upper 50s. Right now at O'Hare, it's 38 degrees. Next update in 15 minutes on AM 560, The Answer.
There's been a lot of talk recently about fake news, and it's gotten a lot harder to know who in the media you can trust. Too often, reading just the headlines can be misleading. You need to turn to a place that you can trust, a place that gives you more than just the headlines and more than just the mainstream media spin. What you need are answers. That's why we're here. Get the latest news. Find out what it means and why it's important to you. Real news, real answers. Join us on AM 560, The Answer.
Are you stuck? Is this the year you finally grow your business and make more money? During Barry's many years of running his own company, he had to deal with the challenges of a business that just wasn't going anywhere. It was a painful realization. His business had flatlined, and he had no idea how to breathe new life into it. It was especially difficult for Barry since his customers were not getting the service he was so passionate about delivering. Second, he wasn't making any money. Finally, his business was sucking the life out of him. Do any of these sound familiar? Your sales won't budge in spite of your best efforts. You have few new leads for customers coming in and existing customers fading away. You're burned out and completely exhausted. It's no longer fun and your family suffers as well. If you're one of the millions of small business owners facing these problems every year, Barry has the answer. Check out BarryMaltz.com/unstuck to subscribe to his 6-part video series.
How would you like a second source of income without having to work a second job? Does that sound just about too good to be true? Well, my friends at Online Trading Academy can show you how other people are doing this every day. You see, they have a patented core strategy that can help you learn how to follow what the big banks on Wall Street are doing and how profits are being made when the market goes up and even when it goes down. Right now, they are offering a free Wall Street Insider Kit, so you can get started right away. Just call 888-984-TRADE. You'll get 2 online classes, instructional videos, and a guide that will help you learn to build that second income. It's all free. Call 888-984-TRADE. They will even throw in 2 free tickets to an upcoming workshop, so you can ask questions and learn more. The market is making all kinds of moves. Are you ready to move with it? Call 888-984-TRADE, 888-984-8723. Call 888-984-TRADE.
Stick around and get your small business unstuck. More of Business Insanity Talk Radio with Barry Maltz. Now on AM 560, The Answer.
every small business owner has to understand that their personal and professional lives are not separate. Ethical things done off the job is actually a consequence to the company that they run. My next guest has done extensive work to provide this. Adam Yord's research focuses on corporate governance and is currently conducting studies in executive compensation, board structure, corporate investment, political corruption, and managerial integrity. He's published his research at top peer-reviewed scholarly journals such as the Journal of Financial Economics, the Journal of Empirical Finance, the Financial Review, and the Journal of Corporate Finance. Adam, welcome to the show.
Hi, Barry. Thank you for having me.
So does this still come as a surprise to anyone out there that in today's world where everything is recorded, right, everything needs to be transparent, that personal and professional lives are really not separate? Do people still think they can have two different lives?
Yeah, so this is really interesting, right? You'd not expect to even find these events out in the media. But there may be some notion that, yeah, integrity is important. We think this is valuable, but really, how do you measure it? And that was what the motivation of our study is. We look at events that signal something about how much value the individual or the executive places on their reputation.
You know, it's really kind of interesting because we see this just recently as the behavior of the Uber CEO, right, where he was berating an Uber driver, right? And that stuff is just captured. People really have to understand that. I remember a story so many years ago, 25 or 30 years ago, about a rabbi who had to go to the restroom, but he didn't want to go into McDonald's to use the restroom because he thought people would see him and think he was eating unkosher food. I think that's what you have to realize, that every action you take is going to reflect who you are and what your company stands for.
That's right, yeah, and that's certainly what we find in our data.
So why do people have a hard time getting this?
You know, it's surprising because, I mean, even in our sample, a third of our executives are repeat offenders, yet a minority of them are fired. So maybe these people feel that, you know, what you do off the job is your own business. We just care about can you focus on the numbers at the office.
And what kind of research shows that that just isn't true?
So we started diving into this, and we looked at very public signals of questionable integrity, so something that we could measure. And so this is if there was an accusation of dishonesty or sexual misadventure, you know, does that impact the firm's shareholders, and does it impact the firm's business relationships?
And so what do you find?
And so what we find is that shareholders absolutely care. They care about it, and most interesting, they care particularly when it's a dishonesty type event, lying on your resume, cheating on your golf score, something along those lines. But we also find that the business's customers pay attention. Their partners pay attention. So the idea here is, you know, if you would lie to your wife or lie on your taxes, maybe you would lie to me as well. And so when we engage in business together or if I'm providing capital to that firm, you know, there's some contractual arrangements that keep me protected, but there's some things I can't contract on that I kind of have to trust you about. And what we're finding is that the firm's business partners, when the top manager is arguably unethical, the business partners are paying attention.
And so I guess one of my questions is that sometimes it doesn't really affect it. So if you go back to the election where Donald Trump and the whole idea of the Access Hollywood came out and there were some of those indiscretions, well, for a majority of the Electoral College, that didn't make a difference. So why the double standard perhaps in politics versus business?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure I can wade intelligently into politics, particularly in this election. But at least in the business community, it definitely seems to matter. I mean, these individuals, they're losing important customers. They're losing important business partners. And the markets, the financial markets, are punishing them. And there's consequences for profits for this. We're finding that their firms are having to move into perhaps lower margin businesses where trust may not be as important.
Well, I guess it goes back to trust. Does it matter what your brand really stands for? So let's say it probably makes a difference whether you're Whole Foods, right, or if you're your local Bales Bondsman.
Yeah, absolutely. So we started to look into that, and we tried to classify firms that operate in industries that arguably maybe you want somebody to bend the rules versus those that reputation is very, very important. So, you know, if I'm a international steel manufacturer that I've got to get into certain markets and maybe you've got to push the envelope in terms of bribery. That, you know, maybe if there's an unethical CEO in that industry, we're not surprised. But if this happens at Disney, we're really surprised. And that's, in fact, what we find in the data, is that managers that operate firms where reputation is arguably more important, the damage is a lot more severe.
Right. And so what do you say to CEOs that kind of reject this notion where they say, listen, I just want to have my own private life. It's none of their business.
Well, I mean, they're going to have to accept the consequences.
That's right.
To their firm.
I say to them, wake up. You're living in 2017.
You know, it's interesting is that because only a third of these executives are being terminated for these actions, I mean, that implies that the boards that supervise these executives either think this doesn't matter or just doesn't matter enough.
Right.
And we find in the data that shareholders punish those directors as well when they go up for election.
So, Adam, what is your advice to, I guess, small business owners where they really have to merge their personal and professional life together to make sure that it doesn't negatively impact their business?
Yeah. So, I mean, interesting enough, in the data, where we find these events are much more likely to occur in family-held firms, so closely held firms, which arguably would be small businesses. I mean, that's just to say that you don't have a private life if you're running as a CEO of your company. If you're representing your firm, you know, you're going to have to keep your nose clean.
Right. So your
be advice, ethical.
Right.
You know?
So your advice is really to go do something else. But we've also seen that what is ethical is really different from person to person. So do you have to first answer the question is, how does my brand define what ethical is and then live up to that?
Absolutely.
And so how do you suggest you do that? Because I think a lot of small business owners, they may not understand what their brand is and the ethics associated with that. So where do you start?
Oh, I mean, I think it's a pretty tough question. I think you just have to live right by your principles.
And so your principles, I guess, are really reflected in whatever your brand is. Is that the way that it works?
Yeah, I would say that's fair.
And so it used to be years ago that, you know, there was one set of rules for the managers or the leaders, and there was one set of rules really for the employees. But now I really believe, Adam, now with social media, where that information can get out so easily, there's really got to be one set of standards for all sets of people in your company.
That's no doubt. I mean, I think our evidence would really suggest that the tone at the top really is important.
So people really now do reject that managers really should live by a different set of rules than everybody else.
I think that's what the data is telling
us. And so why has that changed? Because it used to be there were executive bathrooms, right? That they were really set. There was something different for those people. Why did it change?
I mean, there's certainly a much greater focus on good corporate governance since the scandals of Enron and WorldCom, that we're paying a lot more attention to what's going on in the C-suite.
And so,
arguably for the better, right?
Right, right. I mean, I guess it's arguably for the better. Now we're seeing the current administration really roll back some of those regulations, so you kind of wonder what's really going to happen. Do you think that social media and access to the general public, where people can be, these whistleblowers, has that had an effect on it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think just if you look at the number of observations in our sample, they've dramatically increased since the advent of the internet. I mean, I would say social media, the internet, and the media at large are an additional monitor on firms and their executives.
So, Adam, last question I had for you is, what is your advice for stakeholders when perhaps the CEO does get hit with some dishonesty, indiscretions? Can that CEO be reformed in the mind of the brand and the customers, or you just have to cut him or her loose?
Oh, that's tough. I mean, you're going to have a heart-to-heart with that executive for sure to see if this behavior is, one, going to continue. Because we find that these events signal that these executives are going to do other questionable behavior at their companies in the future. It may be better to just let them go if they don't seem to be willing to change their ways.
So it's not necessarily one and done, but I'm sure what it does include is some kind of heartfelt apology, and that's another subject where people like United, the executive really has to learn how to apologize.
Right. Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, we find a lot of these guys are repeat offenders, so that may not be effective.
Right. So, all right, well, it's been fantastic to talk to you because I think this is a very troublesome topic for a lot of folks and phones that people struggle with. Where can people get in touch with you?
You can reach me here at the University of Missouri. You go to my website through the College of Business.
Well, I appreciate you being on the show, Adam.
All right. Thank you, Bert.
Coming up next, over the last 25 years, the definition of entrepreneurs really has changed. An expert that's going to talk about the history of just that area. This AM 560, The Answer, will be right back.
You need to understand that the way you build wealth is you do not use the evening news or CNN or Fox to set the tone of your emotions around your investing.
The Dave Ramsey Show.
If you're thinking of changing your investing patterns because you're watching the news, you need to turn off the news. You are in charge of your destiny.
Dave Ramsey. Weeknights starting at 7. Presented by Wintrust Community Bank on AM 560. The Answer.
Fox News Radio, I'm Carmen Roberts. Voting's underway in France, an election so divisive that some voters may choose a blank ballot.
There has been a feeling on the left that there is no left-wing candidate and that it's choosing between plague and cholera, and on the right that their own candidate was done in by dirty tricks.
The runoff elections between centrist Emmanuel Macron and far-right nationalist Marine Le Pen. Macron enters the election with a 20-point lead. And a growing wildfire in South Georgia forces dozens of evacuations from St. George. A lightning strike started the fire last month, but worsening conditions are fanning the flames.
Low humidity, high winds over the last couple days, and it pushed the fire past one of our containment lines in the southeastern part.
Tom Stokesberry with the U.S. Forest Service. Residents near the Okefenokee Swamp urged to stay off the roads. Fox News, we report, you decide.
How can you get from here to there? We've got the answer from the Alarm Detection Systems Traffic Center.
I'm Paul Bodenloss with a look at the roadways. Outbound on the Kennedy, slowing between Adams and Ogden with overnight construction. Downtown to the Junction 11 to O'Hare 21. Also at Ohio, that exit ramp still remains closed until 7 a.m. with overnight construction. Also at Lake, the exit ramp is closed. That continues until 10 a.m. Inbound Eisenhower to Splane, stall takes out the right-hand shoulder. Also at Austin, the stall in the left lane. And at Paulina, there's a stall in the right-hand lane. Finally, on the Stevenson, heading inbound at Damon, there's a crash that has the right-hand lane blocked. You also find between State and Lakeshore, long-term road construction is in place until the end of 2017. Tonight, 38 and clear skies. Tomorrow, 52 and sunny. Currently, it's 46 degrees. Next update in 15 minutes on AM 560, The Answer.
Growth is key to the success of small business owners, but a lot of companies fail to reach their potential because they can't find enough customers. Maybe because it's competition or not knowing where to find new customers, or maybe it's not having a big enough marketing or sales budget. But there is a new opportunity horizon that every small business can now take advantage of. Simply put, it's the 500 million consumers in China who love to buy online, especially authentic products made in America. They represent an unprecedented opportunity for every American small business to act now. But to make China work for you, there's only one partner you ever need. That's Alibaba, the Chinese version of Amazon and Google, where you can buy and sell anything with hundreds of millions of consumers and suppliers all there waiting for you. Alibaba has done the hard work creating the marketplace. If you want access to this incredible marketplace, you need to learn a lot, but fast. Sure, you can hire a consultant for hundreds of thousands of dollars, or you can watch thousands of YouTube videos and hope you can learn not to make a really big mistake. Or instead, you can attend a two-day Alibaba event in Detroit on June 20th to 21st called Gateway 17. Here you can meet experts, form new business relationships, and learn from companies already in China. In just 2 days, you can know everything you need to know to start growing fast. Gateway 17 has limited availability and expects to sell out fast. And because I know this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for my listeners, I've talked them into an amazing offer. While event passes are still available, save 50% off the registration fee. This is a great growth opportunity for current businesses as well as entrepreneurs. But you can only get this great deal if you go to gateway17.com and enter my code BITALK when you register. This is the only way to get this great offer. Go to gateway17.com. That's G-A-T-E-W-A-Y BI-Talk17.com and enter BI-Talk when you register. I look forward to seeing you there.
Tune in to Healthline every week with your host, Dr. Bob Marshall, Ph.D. This month's special is Quantum Greens Powder, a once-living, naturally potent, vegetarian and gluten-free blend of the finest, most pristine greens from the best sources worldwide. Buy two bottles, get the third one free. Call 800-370-3447. That's 800-370-3447.
Join Dr. Bob Marshall for Healthline, Saturday morning at 10 on AM 560, The Answer. Treat the most important woman in your life to an extraordinary Mother's Day this year at the Bolingbrook Golf Club. It's almost here. Mother's Day is Sunday, May 14th, and your mom deserves the best. Take her to the Bolingbrook Golf Club for an elaborate champagne brunch from 9 to 3, featuring a complimentary glass of champagne or mimosa per adult. Make your reservation for Mother's Day now. Just $42.95 for adults and $22.95 for kids 4 to 12 years old. Visit BolingbrookGolfClub.com for all the details. BolingbrookGolfClub.com.
Now, back to Business Insanity Talk Radio. It's time to get your small business unstuck on AM 560, The Answer. Once again, here's Barry Maltz.
Well, I definitely feel over the past 25 years, the definition of what an entrepreneur is and what they can do has drastically changed. My next guest, an expert on the history of entrepreneurship, Joe Carlin, is the co-founder of Value Guards and a practitioner of business valuation, patent valuation, and market assessment. He's got a new book out. It's called A Brief History of Entrepreneurship, The Pioneers, Profiteers, and Racketeers Who Shaped Our World. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
So first of all, why write this book? Why is it important that small business leaders really understand the history of entrepreneurship?
Well, I think of a quote by Churchill, the farther back you look, the further ahead you can see, and I think that applies to all fields of life, including entrepreneurship, because one learns about what is the role of entrepreneurs, and also what has the differences between successful and unsuccessful entrepreneurs stretching back through time.
Well, you know, it's interesting because there's always been entrepreneurs, there's always been small business owners, but it seemed like in recent history, you know, the mid to late 90s, being an entrepreneur actually got to be sexy. Why'd that happen? Just because it seemed like a get-rich-quick scheme now instead of working hard over 50 years and then being successful?
I think that's part of it. I think the other part of it is that relatively recently, entrepreneurship and innovation have kind of merged, but historically, and still, for most entrepreneurs today, it's not necessarily highly innovative in terms of technology, but the sort of Steve Jobs type story, of Elon Musk type story of almost this mad scientist level of inventiveness coupled with the entrepreneurial side makes for a great story.
But you say in the book that a lot of times little-known entrepreneurs have actually shaped the business world. Talk about that.
So, I mean, for example, there's in the Industrial Revolution, we all know about James Watt and people, or more obscure people like Hargreaves, whose contributions in terms of what they did were in the long term at least as significant. But we don't know about them because on the business side, or we don't remember them as well because on the business side, they were not as astute. They didn't protect their intellectual property properly, and they didn't develop their innovations into large businesses like these others did. But on other levels, in terms of what they contributed in terms of innovation, they were at least as significant. So there's sort of a cautionary tale there about patents.
Now, you also talk about in the book that there are some mistakes that entrepreneurs have been making from the beginning of time. What are some of those mistakes, and how can we avoid them?
Well, the most common mistake is having a concept and not following through diligently enough with the execution of that concept, and which can involve both the effort and the time. Because often there are people who have, you know, I actually met someone who came up with the first bottled water concept, but he didn't follow through with it. So I think the fall through is a big one. And I also think picking the wrong partners, and there's plenty of examples of that, is another big one.
And so you,
among dozens of others.
Yeah. So you've looked back, you know, Joe, really on what's happened in the past. What do you really see happening in entrepreneurship over the next 20 years? Because it seems like more and more people are getting into their own businesses.
Yeah, I think this phenomenon of the Main Street entrepreneur, and there's actually another author who wrote a book about that, is really going to keep increasing as people find less and less security with the traditional jobs, like the sort of job for life becomes less and less common. So there's sort of less downside with starting one's own business. So I think that will increase. And I also think that on a broader level, the impact of entrepreneurship, such as what's happening with space tourism, I think the impact of entrepreneurship on other areas of life will keep growing as well.
Is that because you think that the government is pulling back and the innovators are pushing forward?
Exactly. That's what happened with the internet to a certain extent, and that's certainly what's happening with space tourism.
The last question I really had for you is, I've always thought that a small business owner was different than an entrepreneur. Do you define them differently?
Yeah, there is a gray area there. I define them a bit differently, though, because I go with the Peter Drucker definition of entrepreneurship, one who endows resources with a new capacity to create wealth. So whether it's someone who's running a franchise, they are doing that, but they're doing that in a less distinctive way than someone coming up with a new concept, even if it's a new restaurant concept. So yeah, I mean there's a gray area there, but I think the entrepreneur is sort of a little more on the independent side than someone who's let's say buying a franchise.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think entrepreneurs are much more innovative and trying to grow something much bigger. Well, the title of the book is called A Brief History of Entrepreneurship, The Pioneers, Profiteers, and Racketeers Who Shaped Our World. Joe Carlin, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Coming up next, what holds small business back from retirements? Well, these companies can't operate without them. My next guest has a solution coming up, AM 560, The Answer.
Stuck in traffic? We've got the answer. From the Alarm Detection Systems Traffic Center.
I'm Jeremy Scott, taking a look at your roadways. We'll start things off with the outbound Kennedy, where you're slam-packed Adams to Ohio, with overnight road work in the three right lanes, 14 to Montrose, 24 minutes out to the airport. Also, the ramps to Randolph Lake and Ohio close until later on this morning. Other than that, delay free everywhere else you need to go. Don't forget later on this morning that the Southwest Half Marathon will close Route 83 from Harlem to Archer, and you're going to see Deerfield, Deer Dash Coast, Telegraph, Wilmot, and Greenwood. Also, a couple of parades taking place later on today, including the CPD St. Jude Memorial March. We'll close streets around the museum campus, and the Cinco de Mayo Parade closes Cermak from Damon to Marshall, later on this afternoon. Will be a great day for all these festivals as we're going to see some sunny skies and highs in the upper 50s, lower 60s, 38 at O'Hare, 39 Midway, 45 Lake. Next updates in 15 minutes on AM 560, The Answer.
In my world of 25 years of marriage, getting my wife flowers is always a great idea. It's even a better idea to get my mother flowers on Mother's Day, which is right around the corner. But I always had problems saying the right gift, and believe me, I don't want to send anybody crap. You see, the company would almost never send what I asked. It seems like they were always running out of roses and substituted carnations instead. They would send old flowers that were picked weeks ago so they would never open. Well, I finally found a new flower company called Bloom that doesn't cut these corners. The flowers, they actually are picked right before you order, so they last a lot longer. They're arranged by a designer, so they're Facebook and Instagram ready. And for small business owners, it's super convenient. It takes less than 2 minutes to order. And wait till you see these flowers. There's this wow moment. It's a huge bouquet. You can tell it's handmade. A ton of flowers at the price. The burlap wrap truly adds a premium touch, and it's really different from that cheap cellophane crap the other guys use. And then this filler isn't cheap like the stuff like they call baby's breath, which in my opinion is just weeds, but beautiful and expensive like eucalyptus. The vase, truly a premium touch. Your mom's going to use it for years and be reminded of your thoughtful gift. And now here's the best part. I have an exclusive offer to my listeners for this week only. Bloom That will include at no charge a premium designer vase that costs everyone else $15, plus handmade caramel treats, normally $10, but free to my listeners. That's a huge savings of $25. And here's how to take advantage of this amazing offer. Go to bloomthat.com/insanity. That's bloomthat.com/insanity and find the perfect handcrafted designer flowers. You'll automatically get the premium designer vase and caramel treats, a $25 value. Again, it's bloomthat.com/insanity for premium designer bouquet, free vases, and treats. Don't make your mother lie about the flowers she gets. Can't wait to see them on Facebook.
Stick around and get your small business unstuck. More of Business Insanity Talk Radio with Barry Maltz. Now on AM 560, The Answer.
Well, what holds many small business owners back from retirement? It's because these companies, quite frankly, can't operate without them. My next guest found a solution. Al Levy is the author of The 7-Power Contractor, the book that distills his 25 years of experience owning 7 businesses, including a third-generation family contracting business in Long Island. He was determined to retire at 48. He documented every job within his company from his reception desk to his service techs into operating manuals. It took him 2 years and $156,000 to complete this task. These manuals enable his business to run without him. Within 2 years, he had a return on his investment, and he's met his retirement goal. Al, welcome to the show, and congratulations.
Thank you very much. I'm in a great company, and it's really exciting to share with people today.
So
that, you know, I was the classic owner. I just worked really hard and put my head down, and then I was ended up putting out the fire today that was going to break out tomorrow, and never spent a moment in fire prevention versus firefighting, Barry.
And that's really a big problem for a lot of small business owners, because they really, when you start, you're the center of your business, but as that business grows, they still become the center of their business, and their business can't do without them. So they more have a job than a business, right?
That's correct. You can never leave your business if you're the only thing that keeps it together. So there are two types of companies I work with. The one where the owners have grown to a point, they're just no more hours in a day, days in a week, weeks in a month. They've run out of time. And unless they have systems, they can't leverage.
So,
and the other ones are companies who are great marketers, great at sales. They're grown tremendously. So it's a beautiful house on a broken foundation or no foundation at all. So that company's at risk as well.
So what prevents a lot of business owners from really setting up processes and systems that really can actually make their business more valuable because it can work without them?
Yeah, you know, some of that is a sneaky part. I will tell you who I was, and I'm betting a lot of owners are the same. I was riding along years ago, and my good friend in the industry was in my truck, and this is so long ago, Barry, I hate to admit it, but my two-way radio was asking for me, and my big red box cell phone was ringing.
Listen,
and my was going off.
I love those CB radios.
Yeah, well, this is 96, I guess it was. It was a two-way radio system that we had before cell phones were as popular, because it was a dollar a minute. So my friend looks at me and he goes, "You think that's normal?" And in that instant, I realized who I was. Because one is, I did think it was normal. And then I stopped for a second and took a breath and I go, "Look how important I am." And that was the trap. A lot of reasons we don't document our systems and don't allow it to pay off is because we're attached to these three things. Yeah. We love being a rescuer. We come in and we rescue the problem at our company. We're a fireman. We love putting out fires. So if there aren't any fires, we're going to set those fires so we can put them out. And the last thing, Barry, is we love to be the guru. You don't know that, Barry? Come see me. I'll give you the information you need. And that is what keeps us in prison.
I got to tell you, Al, you here really sit on some critical points, because I think that if you step back and say, this really is not normal, this is not the best way to be. And the problem, you're right, that small business owners, in order to be successful, we got to have big egos. But what holds us back is we have big egos and we want to be the center. I remember, Al, the hardest thing to give up when I was running a company in the 90s, and this was really before email, was I could no longer open up all the mail, because I felt when I opened up the mail, I could understand everything that was going on in the business, but that's really what was holding the company back. So where do you suggest people get beyond themselves, get over themselves, and really start to run something like a business where there are systems and processes that can do without them?
So this is where there wasn't any videotape when this happened, but as I was spending a year putting the outline together, the first place I started was with me. So when I was in my truck and I would finish a sales call or actually a technical call or anything that I was doing, I would turn to my right as if somebody was sitting in my truck and I would tell them what I had done.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be writing the notes. So I hope you can visualize how crazy this is, but this was the only way I could download what was in my head. And that's what I then sat with everybody at my company, understanding the task that it took, the 80% of the task. That's the other thing that sabotages us, Barry. We have no manual, and all of a sudden we're going to have a manual that covers 100%. And as soon as you think you can do that, you're never going to get it done. It's got to be what covers 80%, because if you can handle the 80% really well, the 20% is easy.
It's really interesting, Alan, because I had a guy that used to work for me years ago. He said one of the problems is when we try to create these processes, we try to come up with, as he says, the all singing and dancing, the thing that does everything. And I think you make an excellent point is you got to start with the 80%. So how can people utilize your new book, The 7-Power Contractor, to actually to get this done?
Yeah, so The 7-Power Contractor talks about what any business needs to do is to master those seven things: planning, operations, staffing, sales coaching, marketing, financial. Nobody's a 10 out of 10, as 10 being great, can be 10 in everything, but here's what you can't be is one. So you have to attach, and so I share some of that in the book. And I'll tell you the hardest thing, Barry, that book is thin, and it's thin for a reason. We're busy people. And it was harder to leave stuff out. I've been writing for 15 years now and working with consulting clients for over 15 years. We trimmed it down with the help of my editor, and I made it as plain English as I can. For those who want more, I do have a program that helps you get manuals. It's that what you talked about, what I spent all that money and all that time putting together. It's really a whole lot easier to edit than it is to create. So that's another leg up. It's called the Build Your Operating Manuals program. It's designed for contractors, which are plumbing, heating, cooling, electric contractors out there. That's really what makes a difference for them as well.
And I think one of the most important things is to start, and done is better than perfect. Well, Al, I appreciate you being on the show.
Yeah.
Where can people get a copy of your book and get in touch with you?
The best way to go is through my website. It's 7powercontractor, the number 7powercontractor.com. Take a look and listen, and then just click on the shop. You'll see the book there, and you'll see this thing about the program as well.
Al, thanks for being on the show. Coming up, how to present your pitch to a VC in just 1 minute. This AM 560 The Answer. Be right back.
You've already upgraded your cell phone to a smart device, which lets you use the internet to be more productive on the go. But what about your desk phone? Nextiva is a smart business phone system in the cloud. With a simple setup through an internet connection, you can soon have access to your office communications wherever you are. Stay seamlessly connected with clients and stay more mobile than ever before for just one low monthly cost. Give your business more than just a basic desk phone. Visit Nextiva.com or call 800-799-0600 to learn more today. Nextiva.
Nextiva.
Simplifying your business communications. Thinking of starting your own business? Get on board for a crazy ride. Be the first person to tweet Barry at Barry Moltz and get a free copy of his book, You Need to Be a Little Crazy, The Truth About Starting and Growing Your Own Business. You will need the company.
Here's microbiologist Dr. Kim O'Neill talking about Balance of Nature.
Scientific research has shown that many cancers and lifestyle diseases can be prevented with a diet rich in fruits and vegetables. This prevention comes from the phytochemicals in the plants. They fight against oxidants that damage the cell's DNA, causing mutations that lead to disease. I don't take any supplementation, but I take Balance of Nature because I've seen it in my lab. I've seen the immune response increase. I've seen your DNA repair capacity increase, and I've seen DNA protection, and I know that it works.
Take Dr. Howard's health challenge and find out how to get two free sets of fruits and veggies. We'll even ship them to you free. Call now for details. Call 1-800-2468-751. That's 1-800-2468-751. Or go online to balanceofnature.com. Use promo code Chicago.
Now, back to Business Insanity Talk Radio. It's time to get your small business unstuck on AM 560, The Answer. Once again, Here's Barry Maltz.
So how do you pitch a venture capitalist, a VC, in just a few minutes? My next guest wrote the book on it, Bradley Miles, the author of Break Into VC, A Simple and Approachable Guide to Thinking Like a Venture Capitalist. He's also an investor in Stripes Groups, a leading late-stage venture capital firm that makes $10 to $150 million investments in internet, software, healthcare IT, and branded consumer product businesses. Bradley, welcome to the show.
Hey, Barry. Thanks for having me on.
So we know a lot of small business owners can be really verbose because they're so excited about their small business. But most of the times, they only have a couple of minutes to present to venture capitalists. What should they say and do?
Yeah, it's a very common scenario. So you want to think about it as a funnel, right? So macro, micro, macro. So the first macro is, you know, giving them context on the market size, history of funding in the space. I may not have all the information you do on, you know, say, trucking logistics or church software, but if you provide me with that information, you know, before you pitch your company, it gives me a lot of context. So, you know, first think macro and then go micro, right? You know, after introducing the company and the product, dive into some recent improvements your company's made, maybe new hires, partnerships, announcements. So you want to go micro there and then scale back out to macro. Introduce maybe, you know, general improvements or things that may hinder your business in the long term, maybe regulation, geopolitical risk. And then you just want to do a simple close, a simple power close, something like, hey, we're working really hard on this. We're learning every day. I'd love to sit down with you and tell you more about the business. Something you could simply do in 60 seconds, and you'll be able to get a meeting out of that.
So, Bradley, so there's some key terms that you should say if you're gonna, as you talk about, speak VC and actually give a successful pitch?
Yeah, so Barry, if you don't speak VC, you know, it's really hard for us to have a serious conversation about investing in your company. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book. So not understanding terms like customer lifetime value, right? How to value one of your customers and sort of the revenue they could bring in over their lifetime as a customer. You know, churn rate, the amount of customers or the attrition rate of customers over a given period, a month or a year. And also customer acquisition cost, right? How much are you spending on sales and marketing to acquire a customer? These are sort of simple terms. You know, if I ask you, you should be able to answer, and then we could sort of continue the conversation and, you know, talk more about your business.
You know, and the other one I think you got to say is, when are you actually going to be profitable, right? Cash flow really going to look like? Because eventually you got to be able to make money as a company, right?
Absolutely.
Do you find that entrepreneurs have a hard time thinking like an investor?
Yeah, you know, Barry, I've spoken with, you know, hundreds of entrepreneurs, and, you know, they're very good at pitching their business. But when it comes to actually thinking about the company from the investment perspective, I found there's a real gap in knowledge. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book. It's really key for entrepreneurs to start thinking like investors if they want to raise money.
Well, Miles, I really appreciate you being on the show. The book is called Break Into VC. Where can people get in touch with you and get a copy of the book?
Yeah, so, you know, my goal is to become one of the most accessible VCs around. Shoot me an email anytime, bradley@breakintovc.com. I've spoken with over 50 readers from all across the country. And just, you know, hop on Amazon if you want to check out the book, Break Into VC, or just Google VC Venture Capital in Amazon, and you'll see it.
Bradley, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Barry.
And I want to thank all of you for joining our radio show. Of course, I want to thank our sponsors, Nextiva, Alibaba, and Bloombat. Remember, Mother's Day is actually coming up. I want to thank our staff, especially our booking producer, Sarah Schaffrin, our in-studio producer, Debbie Schreiner, our marketing manager, Courtney Dury. If you're serious about being successful this year, you got to give me a call. I've set up a private line for this. It's 773-837-8250, or you can email me at barry@maltz.com. Isn't this the year that you finally get your small business unstuck? Isn't this the year that you finally make the money that you deserve? Remember, love everyone, trust a few, and paddle your own canoe. Have a profitable and passionate week.
You can find Barry on the web at barrymaltz.com. You've been listening to Business Insanity Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Dr. Amy Harris-Nguyen.